Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the new screensavers is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
The new screensavers is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/NSS. And by Hover. Finding the perfect domain name is incredibly easy with Hover. Go to hover.com/NSS and save 10% off your first purchase price.
The Tech of Beer, Eero's second-gen mesh Wi-Fi system and tips for iOS 11. Live from the Twit Studios in beautiful Eastside Petaluma, we are the new Screensavers.
It's just me.
No, there you are.
I'm just patting Brock Landers on the back for doing such a good job opening the show. Thank you, Brock.
And you know what? Heroes don't always wear capes, Leo.
No. Hey, welcome to the new Screensavers, episode 112 for Saturday, July 8th, 2017. The short guy over here is Leo. The big guy over there, Jason Howell. Hi, Jason.
Hi, how's it going? I noticed you guys haven't carved out a hole in the floor for me to step into when we do this show.
It was in my contract.
I keep waiting for that to happen.
Yeah. We've got to have a trench for Howell here.
The Howell trench.
Jason, of course, the host of All About Android and TNT Tech News Today every Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Pacific.
When I'm not on jury duty.
And, how did that go? Did you convict the son of a gun?
Still going. I have one more week.
Oh, you can't talk about it.
I can't really talk about it other than to say it's a very educational experience.
Well, I found that, too. I was on a jury that we only got half the trial, and then the judge threw the whole thing out.
Oh, what,
which
really?
Is incredibly frustrating because I'm taking notes. I went for 2 or 3 weeks.
Take a lot of notes.
You pay attention, right? You have to turn off your phone. It's serious business. It's hard work.
Yeah.
And then we didn't get to do anything, which was a little frustrating.
Oh, well, you got out of it early then, I guess.
The other thing I found hard is not talking about it.
Yeah.
It's
hard,
isn't it?
Because everybody asks you, and because this particular case is a month-long case, everybody's really wants to know.
Yeah, that's a long time.
All I can say is it's not nearly as exciting as you might think it is.
Can you say if it's civil or criminal? Can you say that?
Civil.
Civil.
Yeah,
that's when
that.
It's really exciting.
Let me tell you.
Those civil cases. Oof. I know. I watch The Good Wife. I know.
It's nothing like TV.
It's not like TV. Anyway, thank you for doing your civic service.
Hey, I think that's really important. Into it. It's actually very interesting.
If only people who wanted to be on juries served on juries, we'd be in a pickle. People, you got to get people like Jason who don't want to be but do it out of the goodness of their.
I'm happy to do it.
Civic pride. Thank you, Jason. Coming up, we got a great show. Oh, I know you're going to be interested in this one. For years, we've been aware of this little microbrewery, a craft brewery down the street in Petaluma.
It's a little startup down around the
startup.
Corner.
They've been here since 1993. They are now world famous. Yeah. And frankly, when people come to see us, all they really want to know is, well, where's Lagunitas? Lagunitas Brewery is here. We're going to talk to the head brewer, the brewmaster, talk about, believe it or not, the huge amount of technology they use in making one of the world's best beers. We're very proud that it's here in Petaluma.
Absolutely.
Recently acquired for a significant sum, some say as much as $2 billion by Heineken. Heineken. But Jeremy Marshall.
Beer was big business.
Beer is big business. And by the way, I can't wait. We got a big pile of beer. We're going to have some fun in just a little bit. They have an in-house programming team, a whole bunch of stuff. Megan Maroney will show us some iOS 11 tips. Yes, she's in the beta. She's going to show you a little bit about what's new with iOS 11. We are going to show you what's new with the new Eero mesh system. As you know, Eero is a sponsor of the show. But I did hear about these new Eeros, and I really wanted to try them out. So I'll give you my my absolutely honest review of the new Eeros. They don't stand up on their own very well. That's okay because they plug into the wall. The new Eero system, really exciting. We're going to look at the poster. This poster is so beautiful from Umphreys McGee. As you know, our good buddy and studio manager, John Slonina, is a major fan of Humphreys McGay. This is an autographed copy of the poster from their Red. They just performed at Red Rocks. How many shows was that, John?
Three
shows. And
how many of them were you at, John?
Three.
All three of them.
See? Are you kidding? Of course he was.
He's kind of a fan.
He takes vacation to go see Humphreys. However, what's really cool is this is an augmented reality poster.
Yeah.
At the end of the show, we're going to show you what happens when you look at this.
It's actually really appropriate that that segment comes after all the beer.
Yeah.
It's the,
is it the beer?
The way the show is laid out
the,
is perfect.
Augmented, what do they call it? Augmented reality?
Yeah, you'll see. It's pretty cool.
So we got a big, we're going to have a lot of show, fun,
yeah.
Big show. And of course, we'll answer questions and so forth. Our hot topics of the week, I got to ask you, you're the Android guru. I went to, when they announced, so Andy Rubin.
Yep.
Let me start at the beginning. Andy Rubin is a guy who, he worked at Danger, I think, did the sidekick. Mm-hmm. He's got a really great, ancestry. Created his own company. It was called, this little thing called Android, sold to Google, ran Android for Google for a while. Retired last year. They thought maybe he was going to go do robotics and eventually left the company. Turns out he's founded a new company called Essential.
Yeah, but under his venture fund, I think it's called Playground. So their whole goal is investing in new hardware companies, and it turns out that he is so into this that he's the founder and CEO under the venture project.
He funded his own.
I know. Exactly. So, he just couldn't stay away from phones, obviously.
So they immediately, when they put us up on the web about a month ago, this Essential phone, I immediately signed up. So did you,
yep.
I think, for...
Absolutely.
What did we do? We reserved it, right?
Yeah, you didn't really drop any money, but you did kind of put your, you know, it's like a written pre-order sort of thing, but probably is nothing binding beyond that.
It's got some interesting features, including a bezel-less design, although in order to do that, they had to cut a little notch out at the top for the front-facing camera. That's kind of weird.
Kind of weird. Some people love it, some people not so much.
Well, somebody pointed out... because it's Android, there's a notification bar there, and
yeah.
There's usually nothing in the middle.
Right.
So I guess that's okay. Anyway, you and I both reserved.
Yes.
We thought we were going to get it by now. He told the Recode conference, June. No.
He said within 30 days, and that was basically the end of June, and we've heard nothing.
Nothing.
I mean, complete radio silence. Of course, now it's early July. Everybody is kind of trying to reach out to Essential to get some sort of a follow-up. They're not going on the record with anything. So who knows what the holdup is? I mean, you know, I've never launched a phone before, so I don't know what the reality is around setting a deadline. But
yeah.
maybe they should have given themselves a little bit of wiggle room and said coming this summer. You know what I mean? And then people wouldn't be scrutinizing it as close as they are right now.
It's also hard to know if this is going to be something to get excited about. You're using the OnePlus 5
yep.
Right now, and which
yep.
is a beautiful phone. We know there'll be a new Google Pixel probably in September. We know there'll be a new iPhone probably in September. So this is a pretty crowded market, especially
yeah,
at the high end, which
market.
This is. This is a full-priced flagship phone.
Yeah.
So I guess we'll just have to see. The good news is we haven't heard anything, but we haven't paid anything.
Yeah, I think ultimately they just kind of shot themselves in the foot by raising the expectations by saying 30 days. At the end of the day, though, it's really not going to matter. Some people are like, well, is this vaporware? It's not going to be vaporware.
You know what?
This is Andy Rubin. He's going to follow through. You're going to see it sometime this
summer. I might beg to differ. This might be good PR. This might be good marketing. Now everybody's going, where is it? We want it. As if it's a great phone. We don't
really
even know yet, right?
It's a really good point.
Everybody wants it because they can't get it.
Yep.
It's not bad marketing. Qualcomm and Apple, that battle royale rages on. Qualcomm, which makes the radio, the data radio, the LTA radio, and the iPhone, also has the patents for so many phone technologies. Apple was paying license fees for these, then decided last year to stop. They owe Qualcomm $1 billion. According to Qualcomm, Qualcomm sued them. Apple sued Qualcomm. Apple says, hey, Apple, it's hard to understand what Apple's position is here because these are legitimate patents. It's not a patent troll. These are legitimate patents. It's a few bucks per phone. Apple certainly doesn't give away its intellectual property to anybody who wants to use it. And yet they say, well, you're stifling innovation, Qualcomm. We don't want to pay you anymore. Qualcomm's response this week is, okay, fine, they're countersuing. And now they're going to the World Trade Organization, and in particular U.S. regulators, and saying, okay, and now we want you to block any iPhones that aren't using our chip. They're using the Intel chip.
So that's basically the specific models, which they haven't confirmed, but that would be iPhone 7 models for AT&T and T-Mobile? Because
yeah,
those are
non-Qualcomm
devices.
I have I bought mine, a T-Mobile iPhone 7 Plus. It has, you could tell by the serial number, the Intel processor in it. A couple of things that Apple did, I think they're a little weird, besides not paying the royalties. The Intel radio was notably slower than the Qualcomm radio. Instead of just, you know, selling it and saying, well, you got a slower version, they slowed down the Qualcomm version so that both versions would be equally slow. It's one of the things Qualcomm's upset about.
Right.
This is an ugly battle. I have to say, at this point, I feel like I'm a little bit more on Qualcomm's side than Apple's side.
Yeah. Well, that was going to be one of my questions, is that some people have come out and said this reeks of desperation on Qualcomm's part. So
they invented
you wouldn't agree.
These technologies.
Yeah.
And Apple still needs to use these technologies. I'm not sure exactly what Apple means when they say we're not going to pay.
What they mean is we're Apple.
Yeah, we don't
we're
have
not gonna
to pay.
Pay.
Yeah, we don't have to pay. I think that's exactly right.
Yeah.
Wednesday, day of action.
Mm-hmm.
What is this all about?
Well, you know, I'm going to be acting when I go to sites like Facebook, Google, Amazon, and Spotify and see that they've blanketed their website with some sort of call to action. Or I'm not even quite so sure, but essentially this is an internet-wide day of action. That's what they're calling it, to, I think, raise awareness around the fact that the FCC, the new FCC, is looking to weaken and eliminate rules around net neutrality. And
Netflix, which had recently said, oh, we don't care about net neutrality anymore.
Yeah.
We already made it, has decided to join this, by the way.
Wait a minute. Maybe the optics aren't so good on this. Let's get involved.
This is a list, if you're watching the video, of all the companies. It's really every company that is getting behind this. They're going to do various things. You can find out more at battleforthenet.com. I suppose some sites will go dark. We've seen that happen before. You may remember the last time this happened, we went black and white for the day. That was a few years
ago.
That's
right. I forgot about it. Are we going black and white again?
I don't know. What should we do?
The engineers look nervously at each other. Wait a minute. Don't say that.
There's a switch you can flip, right? They just go black
and white. It's easy. Let's just go SD all day. For no reason.
I don't want to go dark.
No.
Because I want to cover the...
Yeah,
the,
absolutely. So, well, I mean, that's one of my questions to you is, okay, so all these sites, you know, they change their website to reflect this. What is the change that comes out of that? Is this a call to action for people that visit to then go to the FCC and make their comments known?
If you go to battleforthenet.com, they have exactly how you should act, which is to write your Congress critter. And they have a form you can fill out. They have the letter that you can send. Because, and if you want to know more about why this is an issue, you can find out there. I think it's a very big issue. And I'll tell you why Twit cares a lot about this. If it weren't for net neutrality, we would have a hard time existing, you know?
Yeah.
If carriers, internet service providers could say, well, Netflix and YouTube have given us some money so they have high-speed access to our users, Leo,
what have you done for
us
lately?
Yeah, and then so they make it so it's easy to watch, you know, Netflix, but it costs you more. Or with zero rating, it might cost you nothing for Netflix, but cost you bandwidth to watch Twit. That would have kept Twit out of business.
That would force people to second guess whether they just go to Twit to watch video.
Exactly.
They'd have to be like, okay, well, do I want to run through my allotted balance of hours for Twit content?
Yeah. One of the reasons that we exist, and we can kind of, you know, change the face of broadcasting, is because we can stream over the internet. And up till now, the internet on internet bits were bits. They were created equal, and no company was able to discriminate against or in favor of any streaming company. And we think that's really important. So
I think
we should do something. Maybe we'll go black and white. Maybe we might put a banner up that says, you know, go to battleforthenet.com. We might do that. But it is a big day, and it's Wednesday. And if you have, you know, a bully pulpit like we do, I hope you'll do something as well as all those companies that are participating. Let's not make this slacktivism. You know, slacktivism is changing your Facebook profile picture.
Go ahead, change your profile. That's about all you
show
do
your support,
forever.
And that's it.
Right.
Let's do something. Let's write these letters. Let's contact our Congress critters. Let's stand up for a free and open internet. That's what we really want. That's what we really need. All right, coming up in just a bit, I can't wait. We're going to meet Jeremy Marshall. He brought beer.
He's already brought beer?
Already.
Well, actually, he brought a lot of beer.
Predisposed in his favor. He actually makes the beer. He's the brewmaster at the, and I'm a little prejudiced, but I'm going to say it, the best microbrewery in the nation, Lagunitas. Certainly it's one of the top. Everybody agrees. Mm-hmm. But they use a lot of tech. We got Nathan Olivares-Giles to take a tour of their flagship just around the corner here in Petaluma, California. We'll see what tech they use, and then we'll have beer. But first, a word from Rocket Mortgage, our fine sponsor. We talk a lot about how technology is changing the world, and one of the businesses that needed a change is the mortgage business, the loan industry. Quicken Loans realized that the mortgage experience wasn't really keeping up with the times. It was like going back to the 19th century to a guy with a little green eye shade and sleeve garters and a clipboard. And let me see if I could find your rate here. And, you know, the guy would literally pull, when we got a loan 3 years ago for our house, you did this when you bought your house, I'm sure, pull out a calculator. And go, well, let me tell you, based on this, it's crazy. We've got computers now. In fact, why do you have to even go see a guy to get a loan?
We do everything online.
We do it all online. That's why Rocket Mortgage was created. Quicken Loans, the best mortgage lender in the country, has created this fabulous product called Rocket Mortgage you can do entirely online. And their slogan is apply simply, understand fully, because it's completely transparent, and then mortgage confidently, because you're mortgaging with Quicken Loans, the best lender in the nation, with J.D. Power Customer Satisfaction Awards year after year after year, being number one. They give you the confidence you need when buying a home or, by the way, refinancing an existing loan. So you understand the details. You get to choose the term. You get to choose the rate. They crank and crunch all the numbers. It took us several months to get our last home loan because the bank, a well-known big bank that you, of course, know the name of, kept coming back to us for more and more and more information. Not Rocket Mortgage. They have partnerships with the banks. You could submit your pay stubs, your balances, all online, your bank statements. They crank it out in minutes. Not months, not weeks, not days, minutes. You're going to get approval on a home loan. And you can even do this at an open house. If you're looking at an open house this weekend and you say, I want to buy this house, just go to rocketmortgage.com/NSS and apply right there. You'll know before you leave the open house if you could show the realtor, look, we're approved. And by the way, that helps you get a house. If you're approved, that helps you very much. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSconsumeraccess.org, number 3030. Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. We thank them so much for their support of the new Screen Savers. All right, we're going to have some beer in just a second, but first let's look at how technology helps Lagunitas in a very old-fashioned process. We sent Nathan Olivares-Giles over to the Lagunitas Brewery. Take a look.
Brewing is the second oldest profession in the world. We don't have to really go into what the oldest one is, but there's some good guesses out there. My favorite guess was male modeling. So I went into brewing because it's a very old profession, and as much as brewers have tried to change it and evolve it and to inject technology into it, it always goes back to the basics, you know, mixing hot water and grain and separating things you want from things that you don't want in a series of conversions. So that was part of my attraction. But as Lagunitas grew and faced the reality of trying to make the exact same beer in larger quantities and then across multiple different locations, how do we do this and do it right? And then it became very obvious to us, technology is your friend. Before, we had a bunch of human beings running around with timers or on their phone, remembering to do certain key things at key moments, such as at 2:42 p.m., that's when the hops go in. At 2:55 p.m., that's when a fining agent goes in, things like this. It's very easy, as you know, humans, there's plenty of human error in humans. It's part of the beauty of us not being machines, and they make mistakes, and then you end up with like a sine curve around what you want. So when you move over to machines, they kind of execute flawlessly, but they have within them, you know, various parameters. Human beings are better at winging it. You know, they see a little bump in the road and they go around it and they just keep going. Machines, depending on their instructions, you know, they just stop and they're not creative. It's tightened either end of the sine curve where the variability used to be like this with humans, and then now it's just like that. So We've been able to set specifications for every single parameter in our beer. And then we have a lot of different parameters, not just the obvious ones like, you know, the strength of the sugar, alcohol, hops, pH. You know, there's a lot of different stuff, color, the list goes on and on. All of a sudden, we were able to set specifications and consistently meet them. And I think the way that that plays out in trade is customers all of a sudden come back to the beer that they remembered liking. And then when they consume it, they have the same experience that they remember having the last time. And that's what we want. Now, the brewer that used to run around and do everything by hand now kind of sits at the top of a pyramid and is kind of on the pinnacle of process control. We've got over 400 valves, you know, 300 sensors, and they all work with a feedback loop, P&ID controllers and things like that. And I'll tell you what, as soon as you have more than 400 or 500 of anything, the statistical chances that one of them is just going to fail at some point in time will happen.
So bringing some of the automation into the process of what Lagunitas does, what are the tangible benefits, both from the business side, but also just for the way it tastes and what people actually get when they're buying your beer?
The number one benefit is that it makes the brewer's hands free to worry about a much higher level set of problems. You know, we have brewers that never had the opportunity to pursue their own like research projects.
So they could come up with new flavors, new beers, new recipes.
And there are other areas where it would really take the fun out of it. So no part of me can really imagine our brewery and our beer being the result of a fully automated process.
So why is it important to have that human element? Like what makes the people part of this so special? I mean, we see the benefits of bringing the tech into it, but you're still holding on to this core of human beings.
Well, the most obvious answer is that human beings have this amazing lab equipment right here. Yeah. So brewers, from the raw materials, they've got, you know, hops and grain, and they're, as soon as they open the bag, even if they're not even thinking about it, they smell the smell that comes out of it, and it registers. You know, sense of smell is a very interesting thing because it bypasses the processing part, you know, the frontal cortex. It goes straight to your limbic system, which is your memory, your fight or flight, you know, your animalistic instinctual brain. Whether you like it or not, that sense of smell and your sense of taste, I really, you know, can't imagine. Certainly right now, there's no robotics or machines. You know, they've got little robotic noses that can supposedly smell, and you know, there's really, I don't know, you know, every time I pour my beer into my computer, bad things happen.
Hasn't worked out
really
yet.
Bad things happen after that. I think it's, you know, it's all romanticism. You know, it's this idea that beer, especially our kinds of beers that have this, you know, heavy aroma and very hoppy and floral and all these nice aromas, the romantic notion that beer is made by grumpy brewers, you know, guys with beards or girls in overalls, always grumpy though, and marching around, you know, carrying things and dumping things and stirring and checking stuff out and making all kinds of judgment calls. And it's interesting because we work with a living organism. You know, brewers don't make beer. Yeast makes beer. We're zookeepers.
Yeah.
I mean, we have a job back there that's a yeast rancher.
Yeah.
It'd be an interesting thing to trust a machine to care after something that's living. Although we all know that it's coming, right? I mean, even in plants that are today 100% automated, you know, there's always a human somewhere that is kind of looking after everything. You know, there's like 7,000 to 8,000 breweries now in the United States. The vast bulk of those are really, really, really small. So it is, in many cases, just one person doing everything by hand. And that, to them, that's the pinnacle of craft brewing. But you talk to some that have worked at large breweries and you say, how did you feel? And you worked at a production brewery for 20 years and for 10 years straight, all you did was lift boxes of hops and pour them with a scoop into this. And you did that day in and day out. For 10 years. I mean, you start to see like, huh, wouldn't you have been a lot happier if you were doing something else that whole time? And maybe there was a machine doing that part of the job. And then they think, oh, yeah, you know, my back hurt from, you know, lifting that 5 millionth box. And it's like, yeah, you know, the machine's backs never hurt, right?
It sounds like you see that role at some point, at least for Lagunitas, like never really being eradicated.
We have quite a few processes here right now that are 100% manual, such as like dry hopping and things like that, that at other breweries that are like some of our competitors, it already is an automated process. And it's very easy for me to look at that and say, oh, that just takes all the fun out of it. But at the same time, a little part of me is like jealous, because I'm like, oh, you know, part of that is like heaving all these boxes of hops and getting them in the tank. That's, you know, borders on drudgery. Yeah. So for me, I think the biggest area where automation is 100% my friend every time, and I will consider, you know, if it's going to be $200,000 or $400,000 versus, you know, spending nothing and just continuing to do it how you do it, would be like safety. You know, if you've got an area where a lot of guys lifting things and straining their backs, or somewhere where there's maybe high probability for something bad to happen over time because due to, say, repetitive motion and things like that. I think one area that I know that we are working on, but we're doing it in a real creative way, is you know, what information is out there and what's important and how to bring into relief the very most important part, which is all about making sure that the customer gets what they expect and they don't get an old beer and they always have a nice experience. That's very important to us.
We are very fortunate to have not only Lagunitas in Petaluma, but Jerry Marshall's here. Jeremy is the head brewer at Lagunitas Brewery. I actually wanted to call you the brewmeister. You said that's okay. How long have you been doing this?
15 years.
That's a long time. You studied in college?
Yeah, UC Davis, fermentation science.
Very famous for their wine program, I know. A lot of the wineries up north are UC Davis graduates.
Yeah, we shared a library with those guys, and you could definitely tell who was who. If they had a beard and there was food in it, then they were likely a brewer.
Or bow ties, and then the
wine guys walk around with their shirts tucked in, wearing very expensive clothes.
Tidy. Jason was saying Lagunitas IPA is his daily.
That's my daily beer. If I have one, exactly. Well, and we were talking while this was playing, that's the most popular beer that you guys sell. It's certainly the most available beer.
Yeah, so our founder, 1995, just decided to flagship and lead with an IPA at a time when everyone else was like, nobody wants that.
It's too hoppy.
Bitter.
Well,
yeah.
Hoppy.
I mean,
but that's become the flavor people want.
De facto. Yep. Yeah. I mean, there's been a big shift, I feel like, in the past. I don't know how many years, past 10 years. There certainly was a point in my own beer exploration where IPA was just too hoppy, too strong for me. And then somewhere along the line, I feel like that's the focus. That's everybody's focus. That's where the wine world of savoring the flavor and really finding the depth of beer.
It's the Chardonnay of bottled beers.
With beer.
Well, your palate evolved.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and after so many years of consumers being underwhelmed by commodity mass-produced, you know,
flavorless
lager beers.
Yeah.
Now all of a sudden, you know, you want to pop the cap off a beer, which we're about to do, and have that aroma like fill the room.
That's
what you want.
Yeah. You've really watched, and Lagunitas has watched a transformation, the rise of the craft brewery, the microbrewery, and you've really ridden that relatively recently. Lagunitas expanded, I remember, to Chicago, now Seattle, Charleston.
Mm-hmm.
Los Angeles area,
technically Azusa.
So you're opening effectively what we have next door, this big brewery in each of these places. Is that when technology started to become important?
Technology became important to us just when we were all right here in Northern California, and we were trying to grow but not compromise the outcome.
Right.
Because consumers don't give a bad beer a second chance. Right. There's so many other choices out there. If they don't like it, they've got options. So.
And this is really a science, but also an art. It's cooking. Mm-hmm. It's chemistry.
There's a lot of art in making a great beer. And yet these have to, bottle after bottle after bottle, be consistent.
Right.
Which is challenging.
And we need technology to do that.
You said you have a little pilot brewery that's bigger than some microbrewers where you can try stuff. Mm-hmm. And then once you get it the way you want it, do you then program that into a computer?
We actually do.
So you do it by hand, mm-hmm. find what you want, and then you tell the computer how to do it.
Yep. You just give it instructions. You have a certain set of machines like malt, mash tun, lauter tun, wort kettle. These are the different vessels. And you give it a series of steps.
Yeah.
And in each step, a series of parameters. So you
that
say
was the, that
temperature
was the
and time are very important
the
for brewers.
The control center you were sitting in front of with all those screens, that's where you would enter that stuff.
We call that mega desk.
We actually have more video.
I love that.
Nate, somehow, for some reason, I don't know why, spent a lot of time wandering around.
Yeah, I know. This is a good deal for Nate.
Jeez. A lot of fun. So tell me about the programming team. You actually have an in-house programming team. What are they doing?
So the in-house software development team, it all kind of started when we hired our first tech guy who wasn't just an IT guy. You know, you know, the IT guys, we consider them separate from the software developers. But it just so happened that this guy had iOS capabilities. And we were on the market looking at CRM. And you can imagine, you know, all the players. You've heard of them all. And what became obvious is these guys were, even though they could be scalable, they were going to charge us for the number of users. So if we had 10 salespeople when we started to do this, and then now we have 250 people, it was really, you know, smart that instead we built our own CRM.
Yeah. What is that, just before you...
That was a supercritical hop extract. So it's pure alpha resin hops.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that looks amazing.
Yeah, don't ever get it on your face.
No kidding. So the first app, that was an iOS app that they did, that he did for you, or?
Yeah, it started with CRM, and then they had some other little projects that they worked on, like, you know, distributor inventory tools and order management portals and little things like that.
So it's customer-facing, but it's also in-house stuff.
Yes, it's in-house, and now there's a whole team of guys over there, just, you know, literally a 5-minute walk from here.
Wow.
And then finally, after 5 years of them only working in the sales and marketing world, I finally got them into the brewing world, where they began building tools for the lab, which is aptly called Labrador.
Yeah.
And then tools for the brewers, which is called Doghouse.
We should mention that Lagunitas is all about the dogs.
It's all about the dog. And we love our dogs, and people bring dogs to work. They're not going to be running around in the clean areas and the production areas, but all the offices. And so where do you put, you know, we generate all this data, and where do you put it? And since all of our tanks are named after owners' previous deceased pets or their family pet from their childhood, we said, let's put everything into our own little tool called Doghouse.
Nice. That's awesome. Do you carry an app with you that you can check the state of the, like right now you could see what the vats are doing? And
I got a little carried away with that. They wrote an app for iPad and iPhone, and it gets to the point where you don't have your life anymore, because you're constantly, oh, what's going on with this tank? And, you know, so, and you can get alarms, and you can configure it to be as invasive.
Right. Wow.
And, you know, before you know it, already with, you know, all the breweries, people's phones are blowing up at all these different time zones. So when you throw in, you know, technology can really invade your life.
Yeah,
to the degree that you'll let it.
So, right. Oh, absolutely.
So I had to kind of back away from all of the, you know, alarms and things and
What's the perfect balance there then? Because, I mean, you had pre-app, pre-real-time data. Now you have access to as much of it as you want.
Right.
But if you need to peel back, like, is there a happy medium that...
I think the main thing is to get rid of nuisance alarms and then make it to where alarms are so infrequently occurring
that when you get them, you know it's important.
Yeah, it's an oh crap alarm.
Right. Here's we get a little tour of Doghouse, the software. Jeremy gave us a little inside look. Take a look.
Basically, it has the batch organized. You can see the brews, and these are the ones going on here. Uh-huh. So this is in real time, and it has all of our data and we have it broken by, you can switch batches this way, so we can go to other batches, and then we can even go to the different tabs, organize all the stuff that we care about. So we got our pitching yeast, you know, harvest, so fermentation, so got our dry hop, traceability, history. It's linked to our ERP systems, which is X3, so it has a automatic link so that the inventories and everything is coming out. So like, say something were to go wrong, like for instance, just the other night we had a power outage and we were halfway through pumping a batch from our whirlpool into a tank and power was out for many, many, many hours. We actually lost the other half of the batch thanks to Doghouse, which is what this tool is called. All of our tanks are named after dogs, so the place that we contain all of their information, we call Doghouse. It has that link with our ERP system, and it was able to automatically know, okay, the amount of sweet wort that we lost was, you know, say $723.41. It makes things really, really easy.
Wow. Is that Spotify running on that screen in the left?
That was Spotify, and I don't know if you noticed, there was everything was on there. Really old country, rap.
You play that in the factory?
A lot of Zappa. You need a lot of good music to make good beer.
Yeah.
I love it. That is a good use of the extra screen, I think. It's a little Spotify.
Music's very important to us.
Absolutely. Jeremy Marshall, it's really great to have you. All this is making me a little thirsty. One of the things that's great about Lagunitas, of course, they got IPA, a little something, which is our staff favorite.
That was a special at one point, right? And then it kind of converted into...
Little something occurred is what was just to be a seasonal.
Yeah.
And then it was, you know, everyone had such a good response to it.
Yeah.
We were like, all right, we'll just do it, you know, year round.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff starts that way.
Yeah.
How many different beers are you making at any given time?
Well, if you go into our specialty cellar, there's all kinds of weird stuff and all kinds of different, you know, barrel types and things, aging. But of the main staples, typically about a dozen or so.
Right. Right.
But, you come to our tap room here, we might have five or six really, really weird beers that are available only for a short period of time. And sometimes we only make one keg.
Oh, wow.
And it, you know.
Who gets that?
$1,000.
It's just like that
glass.
Phone you were talking about. You know, if nobody can get it, then everybody really, really
that's
wants
right.
it.
That's how it works.
And that's not normally our thing. We don't like to create coveted things that
fake,
you know, people
scarcity.
Need to wait in line for. We try to put it out there, but. Yeah. Part of the allure of coming to visit our home is we want to have, you know, something
that's
there.
Neat.
And the problem is that sometimes we can't make enough of it.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, everybody's very excited about this Dark Swan. In fact, didn't your wife say bring some Dark Swan home?
Yeah, completely unrelated to today. Last night as I was getting off work, she's like, if you have some time, stop by Lagunitas. I heard they have this sour ale called Dark Swan.
Was this your idea,
and,
Jeremy?
Yeah, it's really good.
It was a group effort, but it was inspired by a winemaking neighbor that was literally right next door to our maintenance shop.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a really unassuming, quite frankly, I can't believe he's a winemaker because he doesn't look like one or act like one.
I can't.
And he brought me in and he said, you know, let me show you a little bit about wine and here, let's learn a little bit about grapes.
Do you put wine in the beer?
So there is Petite Syrah.
What?
So this gets 100% of its color. And look at that. I love how it has that purple foam. It kind of matches the 12th of Never.
It's beautiful. Look at that.
And this gets color from Petite Syrah, which has a lot of pigment. It's a very rich grape. So.
And sours have a unique, but I think for the summertime, a great kind of refreshing, almost a fruity flavor.
So we sour down into the middle range, so we don't try and go all the way down to the...
You're not going
to
go...
We don't want to take the enamel off your teeth.
This is, you know what? This is incredible. This is cheers.
And this beer is dry hopped, which is a Lagunitas must. It's a sour, and it is actually has no, it's 100% stainless. So there's oftentimes the perception amongst the beer geeks is that if it's a sour, it's aged in oak.
Yeah.
But you can actually, you know, you can have oak and stainless, which is typically the types of words that winemakers throw around.
Right. This is my new favorite.
You can swirl it around. It's got nice legs on it. Yeah.
I don't know that it has any legs.
No legs at all. No legs at all.
I think you've been looking at that poster too long.
We want to thank you and everybody at Lagunitas. It's been a great run. I know that Heineken has purchased Lagunitas, but the good news is they want Lagunitas for Lagunitas' sake. And you guys are going to continue to be the great craft brewery that you are and spread the word around the world. And I'm thrilled to hear it.
That's exactly right.
Nice to meet you, Jeremy.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Prost. Wow. Megan Maroney is going to give us... This show's going to get progressively more interesting.
How about you? You take this back to the next set. I'll take this to the next
set. This is really...
By the end of the show, it should be sloppy.
I'm leaving all this beer here for you guys.
Really?
And we
really
totally
good.
Drank them way out of order. You're supposed to start light and then go...
I couldn't...
You just went straight, you went straight for the...
I had to go straight for the dark swan. But tell me about the 12th of Never.
So we said that we would never can.
I've never seen a Lagunitas can.
But what we really said is that we would be the last large brewery of the big guys. Yeah. We would be the last to can. Because with two or three new breweries coming out every day, you can't say, we'll be the last brewery to can. Because
obviously. There's always going to be another brewery that doesn't.
Right.
But why cans? Because it's easier to ship, to deliver.
Lighter, you know, golf courses, concerts, airlines. This beer has been very popular in the airlines. Yeah. But it's called 12th of Never, as you all know. It's the day that never comes. Like, I'll send you my rent check on the 12th of Never.
12th of Never,
You know?
Yeah.
And little tongue-in-cheek. We put the bottle cap on there. Just to remind of our roots about glass, and this beer is unavailable in bottles.
Oh,
so this is, if you want this, it only comes in the can, and so far it's the only one that we do can.
How would you characterize this?
It is a hoppy pale ale, light, refreshing, and it's very, very, very tropical. So if you just want to, you can see how light it is, and it's extremely aromatic. I mean, you can.
Smell
the hops coming out.
Oh, I love it. See, I'm loving the hops now. Mm-hmm.
Floral, pine, cedar.
Into a hop drinker.
There you go.
Oh, I can't have another beer.
This is our show juice, Leo.
Show juice. It's show juice. It's okay. Mommy's got to have her show juice now. Let's take a break. we have some show juice. Thank you, Jeremy. It's been really a pleasure having you.
You're
coming
welcome.
Up, Megan Maroney and iOS 11. But first, I got to tell you about Hover. I was on Hover this morning transferring. So I bought from somebody. They had he had leolaporte.com, and I bought it. And it was on that other, you know, your father's domain registrar. And I couldn't wait. I finally got it off of there onto Hover. And it just comparing the two reminded me of why I love Hover.com. It's clean. It's simple. They don't upsell you every 5 seconds. They offer a great product at a great price. And, of course, they have all the domain extensions, 400 of them, .com, .net, but also .pizza. I think Leo.pizza is my next. Leo.ninja. How about howl.horse?
I don't know what to say about that URL.
Howl.tech. dot design. Hover Connect will set your domain name up automatically with your website. In fact, they support everybody. It was so easy to take leolaporte.com and put it on WordPress. Just a couple of clicks of the mouse. It was incredible. Hover doesn't do all that other stuff. They offer only domains and email. They're not going to upsell you. They're not going to try to sell you something you don't need. You could focus on finding the great domain name and buying it there at a great price, then getting back to work on your great idea. I love it. It works. Your domain will, frankly, I think one of the things people should go to Hover.com for is to get a personal domain for your email. Because you may change email providers. It's a pain to do a change of address. But if you have, you know, Jason and Howell.com, you don't have to ever worry about that again. So get that domain name at Hover. You can easily have Hover handle the email for you or forward it to another email provider. It is simple. It's powerful. Unlike most other domain providers, they include Whois privacy for free. So your home address, your phone number, completely protected with all the domains that support it. If you have multiple domains spread out, as I did across other domain providers, I'm still doing a little bit of moving. But I think I'm going to get the last domains. I'm moving the last bunch of domains over. And by the way, you'll save money when you bring them to Hover. And with volume discounts, the more domains you have in your account, the more of a discount you get. With Hover, no more digging through help articles to find out how to get your domain working. If you ever need a hand, you just give them a call. Their awesome support team is there to help. And frankly, the domain dashboard is so easy to use, you're going to love it. By the way, they have a no-hold, no-transfer policy that they take very seriously. When you get a support rep on Hover.com, they're going to help you. They're going to solve the problem. Find a domain name for your idea. Go to Hover, Hover.com/NSS. You get 10% off your first purchase. Hover.com/NSS. Hover, domain names for your ideas. How do you like the 12th of Never, Jason? You like
I'm doing just fine, Leo. How
it's
are
good.
You?
No.
How are you doing?
Never drink to excess.
You guys are lightweights.
Yeah, I know. It's true. I have found my new beer. Here is Megan Maroney. She's found her new version of iOS. It's a beta, but it's designed to make your iPad, particularly your iPad Pro, more like a computer. She's got some tips for you. Watch.
I've been playing with iOS 11 on the new 10.5-inch iPad Pro and the old 12.9-inch iPad Pro, and here are a few simple tricks I've learned. First, know the difference between the dock and the app switcher. iOS 11 is going to take a little bit of getting used to, but it's all good, I promise. First, you're going to have to get to know the dock. It will feature the most recently used apps on the right and the apps you choose to put in the dock on your left. Go ahead and fill that thing up with your favorites. It will fit a dozen. To summon the dock, slide your finger from the bottom of the screen. The app switcher is a display of everything you have open. To get to that, you also slide up from the bottom, but slide up a little higher this time. Two, if you, like me, take a lot of screenshots and mark them up, life just got a whole lot easier for us, my friends. Taking a screenshot hasn't changed. Just hold down the power button and the home button at the same time. But new in iOS 11, a thumbnail of the screenshot will suddenly appear on your screen. You gotta be quick. It disappears in 5 seconds if you ignore it. To share the screenshot, press and hold the thumbnail. To mark it up, tap it and you'll get a markup tool. To share that, tap the share icon. Three. Of all the many pleasures of installing a beta is that you might see a bigger drain on your battery. Don't worry, this will probably be fixed by the time iOS 11 is released to the public in the fall. But if you still want to use the beta and you want to improve your battery life, go to Settings, Battery, and do a little inventory of what apps are sucking up the most juice. Also new in iOS 11 is a setting for the flashlight. Now, in the past, only phones with 3D touch could adjust the flashlight to a lower or a higher setting. Now, everyone with an iPad or an iPhone can. If you use your flashlight a lot and you want to save a little battery, adjust the setting down to low. To do that, go to Notification Center and swipe to a lower setting. If you've got tips for iOS 11, I want to hear them. Email me at megan@twit.tv or tweet at me. I am at Megan Maroney. I host Tech News Today every Monday through Friday with Jason Howell at 4 p.m. Pacific. And I host iOS Today every Tuesday at 9 a.m. Pacific with Leo Laporte.
Thank you, Megan. Yeah. Slow down on that,
oh,
boy.
Man, this is my third one.
Did you see, Jeremy was showing us this on the pull tab on this. They laser cut a splat.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
There's the splats on the side. You can see it right up there.
Yeah.
And they just went ahead and put that in the
pull
tab.
They said, wow,
no
we might
big
as well.
That can't cost much. I know, right?
Jeez Louise.
It's the details. It's the little details. It's the character. They have a lot of character
they
in
do.
The brand.
They do. And it's really good. Somebody was saying in the chat room, one of the reasons people love craft beers is because they're local and they're fresher. You're going to get them. And
right.
I have to say, there's no fresher beer in Petaluma than La Cañitas. They're right next door.
Yep.
I love it. Thank you, Jeremy. All right, I want to talk a little bit about the Eero. I should give you a disclaimer, as we always do up front. Whenever we're talking about an advertiser, Eero is a sponsor of some of our shows. They still are, I think. I first experienced an Eero when they sent me a review unit, and I didn't get it working. I was really disappointed. They were one of the first to do this mesh routing system. I got another unit, got it working, and frankly, I never want to go back. I have tried every router system in the world. And Eero, in fact, I liked it so much I got it for my mom as well in her place back east. When I visited her, I set it all up. Well, Eero has updated their Eeros. This is the new Eero, and they call it, I guess, Eero Pro. The base unit looks the same, but inside it is now 2x2 MIMO, more antennas, and tri-band. So that means they've got the 2.4 gigahertz and 2.5 gigahertz. And I think for most homes, that's a big improvement because 2.4 gigahertz is so congested. Mm-hmm. Your neighbors are using it. Your Sonos is using it. Your microwave oven's at 2.4 gigahertz. So 2.4 is a mess for a lot of people.
If you're connecting to this, do you have this specifically on your device? No, choose the 5 gigahertz?
No, you don't have to know anything. That's the beauty part of mesh. All you do is you set up by connecting the base unit, which is going to be the larger unit if you get the new system, to your cable modem or DSL modem. And then you'll put these Eero beacons throughout the house. Now, how many you use depends on how big your place is. They say about 1,500 square feet per. The Eero beacons are not tri-band. They're dual-band. But that's fine. They're still 1.5 gigahertz, 1.2.4. And they plug in right into the wall, so they're very compact. They have one other feature, which I really like. They have a night light that lights up the hall. So
hey,
I have
you're plugging
in the
it
hall.
In. It might as well be a night light.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's nice. I mean, you can turn it off if you don't want a night light, if you have those in your bedroom or something.
Did you miss not having Wi-Fi on the beacon? Or, sorry, not Wi-Fi, Ethernet.
Ethernet, yeah. So that's one thing you should know. If you do want to have Ethernet, you're going to need to get three of these or two
of the bigger
ones because they have Ethernet in and Ethernet out. With Eero's, it's kind of interesting. There's one of the few mesh systems that allows you. So some people, Stacey Higginbotham's example, she wired her house, so she has Ethernet in multiple rooms. With these base units, you can connect them in every place that they can get to Ethernet, and that will improve your throughput on the Eero's, even though it's the same network, because they can use the Ethernet as a backhaul. Right. That's one of the problems in general with Wi-Fi, and we've talked to Jim Salter about this on the show a couple of times, you probably remember, is when you're using a Wi-Fi extender or a mesh system, you have to somehow have a backhaul so that these extra units can connect to the main unit.
Yeah.
And having tri-band makes the backhaul, I think, a little bit more effective. These Eero claims double the speed. I have to say I've had a lot better reliability, and the range has gone up a lot. I had a trouble in our house with the older Eeros. I had to get more than three units, a base station and two beacons, is more than enough throughout the house. We get great connectivity. So I'm very happy with these. So to recap, we've got dual 2x2 MIMO beamforming. Yeah, beamforming antennas in the base unit. Tri-band. The beacons plug into the wall. They do not have an Ethernet port, and they're dual band. And you get a 10-lumen LED nightlight with automated dimming. It's nice. It turns on when it gets dark. Turns off when the sun comes out.
That's great.
Now, the other thing Eero's added, and all I have to say, all the mesh systems are doing this. They're increasing. This is one of the advantages of mesh, is unlike traditional routers, the mesh companies seem to be paying more attention to keeping the firmware up to date. I get Eero updates all the time, and keeping their software up to date. In fact, why don't I AirPlay this so you can? Yeah, I think I am AirPlaying it. You should be able to see my my iPad. This is the new Eero Plus software, and they've added some nice features. If you used the Eero before, you could see. Well, notice, by the way, it's saying, check Jim. Look, the Jim is out. You know why it's out? It's here. I unplugged it.
Oh, I thought this looked like a gym.
I unplugged
world's
it.
World's smallest gym.
This is in the hall by the gym. So, But that's nice, right? You know, if one of your Eero's not working, you get a warning right away. It shows you all the devices that are connected, and the three most recently connected up at the top, and then you can get all the rest of them there. It also measures bandwidth. So this is the current bandwidth of the system. And most internet service providers, the bandwidth goes up and down. So it's kind of nice that it does these periodic bandwidth checks. But the biggest new feature in the Eero Plus, and I'll have to go to, let's see, I can't remember where this is. I'm going to think it's in network settings, is this Eero Plus feature. This is network security. You can turn it on or you can leave it off. But it's going to filter, and nowadays this is so useful, phishing sites, it's going to filter viruses, it's going to filter out ransomware. And I have to say, I love this idea. Sometimes people use, OpenDNS for this kind of thing. Mm-hmm. You also get some control. You can have built-in protection against, with Eero Plus, against adult sites, violent sites, gambling sites. And the Eero has always allowed you to name devices, to assign devices to a name. So, for instance, our kid, Michael, when his iPad's assigned to him, his iPhone's assigned to him, and I can have the different security settings.
For each device.
For each device.
Oh, that's really nice.
Even more than that, for each person. So I put each device into a single person, right? And then I can say granularly,
by person, I could say, this is also nice. I can also turn off his Wi-Fi by saying, Echo, pause Michael's Wi-Fi.
It's time to go to bed.
Very Michael. Handy at about 10 o'clock at night. Pause Michael's Wi-Fi. I love that. So I have to say, Eero, which I've always liked and I'm very happy with, and I've used them since practically the very beginning, has made some significant improvements with this new Eero Plus. They haven't increased the cost, I don't think. It is still $299 for one base station and one beacon, $399 for a base station and two beacons. The beacons themselves sell individually for $149. That's probably how you would extend your Eero, although you can extend it by adding more base stations. Three base stations, $499. I think the price is right, and, man, you do get a great benefit. The Pro security costs additional $10 a month. I just bought a year of it for $99. I thought that was fairly affordable and a good price.
One question I have about this is about Thread. I noticed that it supports Thread IoT standard. What is Thread?
You probably know more than I do. That's Google's kind of IoT part of Weave.
Okay.
And Thread. And what's the other the other one? I don't know of any devices that use it.
That's what I was wondering.
It's kind of forward looking,
somewhat future proofed in that regard.
Yeah.
Once those devices start to hit the market.
Let's see what else I can show you. I mean, it shows you the connectivity on every device. I mean, they really do a nice job in the software. And what I really like is that they're always updating the software. They're always adding new features. So that's another selling point on all these mesh systems.
There's Michael's iPad. Sorry.
Yeah, you see it, right? And if I wanted to, I could knock it right off. I could just take that right off. You see, I've added it to a profile called Michael, so I can control Michael's security settings independently
of
the rest of the household. I think this is a fabulous tool. Anyway, so look at that, block from network. Just block that on the network. Just don't let that on the network.
But then he's going to call in
minutes. I'm not going to do that. But it is true that if you saw something rogue, something weird, you said, what is that? You could block it from the network.
Right. Is there any way to prioritize devices, especially in houses where you have like a lot of different devices?
All of the mesh systems claim they do it for you.
Uh-huh.
So all of the mesh systems, and Eero was one of the first to say this, is that they're monitoring the network. They know about different devices. They know what a Roku is, what an Apple TV
is.
What they're capable of. And they will do things like move them to a different band or a different frequency as appropriate. If they figure, oh, we're seeing a lot of throughput on the Apple TV, and we want to make sure you're going to get good performance there. We're going to move that to 5 gigahertz and move something else off.
Right.
In theory, and it's very hard for an end user to know whether they're actually doing this, in theory, they're doing that all automatically. You don't have to think about it. All I can vouch for is it works, and it works really well.
That's the most important part.
Yeah, we're very happy with it. And we'll have to ask somebody like Jim Salter to give us a little bit more analysis. You need some sophisticated hardware to figure that out. You can run a speed test on your own, but it also runs speed tests automatically. I'm very happy with this. I have in my house two networks. I don't know why, because Comcast, that's why. And I have tried all of the mesh systems. I've gone through every one of them. Currently using Plume on one network and Eero on the other. By the way, that's probably not recommended because they're going to interfere with each other in the same room. I haven't had any problem. I am most impressed with the Eero. I think this is this is most improved for 2017, the Eero Plus. And definitely recommend it if you're having trouble with it.
I have a Google Wi-Fi at home. That's what I've been using.
How do you like that? Because that's the one I thought was the worst.
I mean, I haven't had much experience with mesh.
So you don't know.
Otherwise. But I do know that it was a huge improvement over what I had before, which was a single router in our living room.
I think it's safe to say that all of these mesh systems are going to be better than just a single router.
Yeah.
In anything that's bigger than, say, a one-bedroom apartment.
Two-story.
My daughter has a one-bedroom apartment. She's got my Google Home. I gave it to her, Google Wi-Fi, and she uses it, and it's fine for her because it's a small area and so forth. You know, we got a bunch of them. You should give it a try.
All right. I will definitely check it out.
You some other ones. You can even borrow the Eero. I think they're going to send you one, actually, because I think they want you to use it for the next time you do an ad. Thank you, Eero. Time for a call for him. On the line from St. Louis, it's Tom in Missouri. Hello, Tom.
Hey, Leo. Good to see you.
Nice shirt, my friend. That is a beautiful butterfly shirt.
You bet. I'm the butterfly guy in St. Louis.
You are? Can you identify all those butterflies on there?
A few of them. They're sort of exotic, but I do butterfly gardening programs for kids and schools and stuff like that.
Oh, cool.
I love butterflies.
Oh, excellent.
That is real. How did you get into that? Are you an entomologist?
Actually, I'm not. When I retired 15 years ago, I joined the North American Butterfly Association, and I said, I'll do some of the tech for you, and you teach me about butterflies. So that's how I got into it.
That is super cool. Yeah. Well, what can we do to help you with your technology today?
Well, again, I was looking online, and I saw my school district, Lindbergh School District, and they said that they had an open device policy in the schools. In other words, you can bring your own device to school, bring whatever you want, and just plug it in or get it on the wireless system, and you're set. And of course, me watching 600 issues of the Security Now program, all sorts of bells and whistles went off, and I got nervous, and I said, oh, my God, they're going to be infecting the entire school and every other person. And, I mean, how can they get around that security problem?
That is an interesting question. I think on the one hand, by the way, Lindbergh is named after Charles Lindbergh.
You bet.
Oh, how neat. Because I see the Spirit of St. Louis flying on their masthead right there.
Right.
That's
right.
Great. I think that they have a problem that many businesses have. We let our employees, you bring your own devices in. This is fairly common nowadays. IT guys would prefer that people didn't bring their own devices.
Well, this has been a big paradigm shift, right?
Like, you have to be practical, right?
10 years ago, businesses were all about, we've got your company-issued device, or, you know, schools have long provided technology. If they're bringing technology in the classroom, they have it. But now everybody already has technology, so there's a lot of cost savings, I imagine.
And at the same time, there is a risk. In fact, that's kind of how ransomware, WannaCry in particular, spreads. If somebody at home got infected with WannaCry, the ransomware virus that took advantage of flaws in the network to spread over a network through SMB1. If they brought it in and the Lindbergh schools were still using older machines, XP machines that hadn't been updated, or newer machines that hadn't been updated, then that person could spread ransomware throughout the school district. So one hopes, and I don't know, but one hopes that the IT department there, if they're going to have a bring-your-own-device policy, also enforces some pretty strict controls over what's going on, and they probably have some hardware. Although, having said that, you know, we have Russell Tammany, our contract IT guy, is the best, and he really protects us. But even he can't protect us against the Trojan horse of somebody bringing in an infected device. His you know, best practice is to make sure everything's up to date and to train people. You know, we told you, right? We had a staff meeting. We said, don't, you know, be very careful. We don't want you to bring ransomware into the enterprise. It does happen. Do you work at the Lindbergh schools, or is that where you do their butterfly teaching? Or
I do the butterfly programs. Oh, I work with the gardens, and so I see the sites. In fact, there's a school right across from my house, and I work with some of those teachers. And of course, when I look at the sites and I look at these bring-your-own-device things, it always scares me a little bit.
Yeah, and I don't blame you. Again, it sounds like they've got a pretty sophisticated technology department. I mean, this is a very sophisticated website. I hope they do. This is no different, though, I have to say, than if you go use a coffee shop, right? You're on a network with a bunch of strangers.
That's true.
So you probably, it would behoove you to take the same precautions that you do at any open Wi-Fi access point, Tom. That means that you yourself have to be careful about what you do. You know, make sure if you know, you use a VPN. That ideally, what you would do if I were you is bring a travel router, a small portable router, have that connect to the school's Wi-Fi, and then you connect your laptop to the travel router. That'll be a barrier to things like WannaCry. But obviously, most of the people, especially the students using this network, are not doing that.
No.
So it really comes down to the IT department being very proactive. I wonder, I'll have to ask Russell. I mean, I think if there were a way to prevent WannaCry, he would be doing that. We certainly have on our network a lot of monitoring, looking for infections, looking for bad behavior. And so he is able to shut some of that down. But the real scary thing is that Trojan horse scenario. Somebody brings an infected computer onto a network. That's pretty hard to defend against.
Wow. Well, I'm not going to sleep any better, unfortunately.
No, I can't reassure you.
But, I know it's a scary situation.
You know, you do the butterfly program at your school. I do the red hot chili pepper
program.
At my school.
Yeah. I don't know what I do. I do the tiny little boxes.
Nothing at all.
No, yeah, nothing at all.
Yeah, you raised an interesting question. I'm going to ask Russell, and you might ask the Lindbergh IT folks, what can you do against that scenario? And then as far as you're concerned, having a router in between you and them would not be a bad thing.
Right.
Okay.
Thank you much. Have a terrific day.
I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah. If you want to be on the show, we'd love to have you on the show. Aaron Newcomb will be our guest host next week. He's the maker.
He wrote
the brand new book called Linux for Makers for Make Magazine. And if you have a question for Aaron or me, here's how you ask it.
Need tech help? The new screensavers are here with answers. Email your tech questions to newscreensavers@twit.tv.
Now, I'm going to take my iPad because I have to show you something really cool.
I'm going to take my
beer.
I might need my beer for this.
Bring your beer. You might actually.
I think I might already know.
So, as you know, as we mentioned, John Slonina, our studio manager, big fan of Umphrey's McGee.
Oh, yeah.
And I've become a fan, too. They're kind of what you call a jam band, right? Yeah. They're a band that, in the spirit tradition of groups like the Grateful Dead, perform long improvisational sets. Really great.
Every
show is
a little different, or a
every
lot show's different,
a little different.
Yeah.
They're just fantastic, and they just recently did, as we mentioned, three shows at Red Rocks, which is just a beautiful venue. And this is the poster they made for their Red Rocks performances.
It's a beautiful poster,
isn't it? Nice. John is in like the fan club, or what do you call that group?
VIP.
The VIP group. So he gets special stuff. But what's cool about this poster, and John wanted us to see it, and now I want you to see it, is it uses augmented reality. So I have the app, and if you go to the Umphrey's website, umphreys.com/AR, and you have the poster, you can get the app. I'm going to launch the app right here, and it says, point at poster. It turned on the camera. Well, I wonder what will happen if I point it at the... Whoa, wait a minute. Now, are you getting this on the AirPlay, or do I have to need to join the AirPlay again? Okay, we'll do it one more time with me so you can hear the audio. But that's a picture of the poster. And it's coming alive.
Wow.
Whoa, fireworks. And that is a really clever idea.
So it's framing the poster and then animating the elements inside of it.
There's somewhere, you know, we've seen these kinds of things before. Somewhere in the poster is a unique identifier, almost a QR code, that the app is looking for. It sees it and it triggers it. Let me just make sure my AirPlay is set up here because I want.
It's really cool. They used Unity to kind of put this all together and a whole bunch of other.
Yeah, because they have Android as well as iOS. So can you see my iPad now, Anthony? Because I just turned on the. You see a black screen. Well, that's not what I'm showing.
No, this is pretty Technicolor. To be honest.
High Technicolor, Apple TV.
Technicolor.
I'm still on. Wait a minute. Maybe I have to do that. AirPlay mirroring. There you go. There you go. I didn't press the right button. Now you should be seeing it.
Right.
Hey,
we have
it.
Success.
Watch. Okay. I'm going to start from scratch. Okay. Watch this. Here we go. So it goes black and white.
Oh.
And now it's alive.
It's alive.
There's
something in my beer, Leo.
Wow. Woo.
Man. That is cool. We got a little preview down at the bottom of a live show, light show going on in that little window.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even notice that.
Well, that's the stage, I suppose.
Yeah, how fun.
That's what's going on.
Well,
on
thank
the stage.
You, John, for bringing that
really
in.
Cool.
I think that is really. Actually, if you pass. It's time for the mailbag. Let's answer some questions.
Bring over the mailbox.
I'm going to have a little bit more of this Black Swan.
Cheers.
Yes, cheers. Thank you. This looks like wine, fizzy wine, doesn't it? Mailbag time, and I think there's a little surprise in here. I'm not sure. Yes,
there's never a surprise in the
mailbag.
So
this is John's VIP pass. And that may look surprisingly familiar because that is, in fact, the same as the poster. I'm just wondering if this would do the same thing.
It does.
It's coming alive.
That is so cool.
Look at that. Yeah.
It works on the VIP pass, too.
So if you see people standing around, staring at their iPhone, staring at their VIP pass.
That is funny.
That's really awesome.
And it was done. This was done for one single venue.
The thing I like and I find fascinating about Freeze McGee is they're not a signed band, right? They don't have a standard record label.
They have their own label.
They do it on the website. They have amazingly avid fans like John, who follows them around, sees how many concerts a year.
88
concerts total that Jammer Bee's been to.
Yeah.
My goodness.
I've seen them. They're great. I love them. They're a very talented band. But this is kind of the new thing, right? You know this with Yellow Brick. What is it called?
Yellow Gold.
Yellow Gold, yeah.
Yeah, you know about this. Nowadays, I think if I were starting a band, I would try it this route. Used to be you say, oh, we got to get the label. We got to get the silence.
Now, we just talked about this yesterday on Tech News Today. Ron Richards was in, Megan Maroney was out. We talked about an artist, a DJ, who is using the Ethereum blockchain network to basically release the album. The album itself is still available on a site.
I think Natalie Merchant was going to do that. Was it Natalie Merchant?
Imogen Heap.
That's done it with a single. Yes, yes.
And more and more, it's becoming this way to kind of control the payments so that distribution happens to all the people that are involved automatically.
Right.
And you cut out the middleman. Yeah. You know, why give 30% to Apple when you can just control it yourself? There's a lot of awareness that has to happen around that.
Well, and that's the thing. And that's why marketing is so important. That's why I think things like this and VIP clubs and special benefits for VIP members, that is a really important part of the whole
thing. The current state of the music industry really seems to be like, yes, you've got your traditional path of people who are signed to a big major label and they get millions upon millions of fans all over the world. But, you know, there's also this kind of smaller way of distributing on the internet where you don't need to have millions upon millions of people to still make a living doing it. You just need to have a smaller group of really engaged fans. And doing stuff like this keeps people engaged.
Very nice. Yeah. It's working. It's working. Yeah. They're able to make a living. Absolutely. All right, pick your email.
One closest to me.
That's always a good way to go. You start.
All right. Let's see here. This is Scott who wrote in, said, 5 years ago, I quit Facebook for good. I deleted all my photos and posts, then went through the process of permanent deletion. After it was finished, I didn't think about it again until a few weeks back when I got this email from Facebook. It said, hey, Scott. Facebook account was reactivated by a recent login to the application Facebook for Android. If you were not the one who reactivated this account, please visit our help center. He says, I figured it was a phishing attack, but it was legitimate. All my old posts and pictures were there.
Wow.
When I logged back in, I was greeted by the attached picture. I think we have the picture that shows a recent login
in
Vietnam.
Yeah, Facebook does this, right?
Whenever, yep.
Yeah.
And he says, Scott says, and no, I hadn't logged in from Vietnam.
Uh-oh.
How do I get Facebook to actually delete and never reopen my account? Their terms of service state they will delete everything but logs after 90 days, but they didn't. And then they reopened it for somebody other than me.
Wow.
This is a tricky situation.
Wow. That is, so as you know, you can, and I've done this a couple of times, deactivate an account. It doesn't automatically delete the data until you say, yes, delete it, and then it waits like 90 days. And if you should log in again in that time,
that's the
it'll
challenge,
recreate
right?
it. But 5 years, A, it shouldn't have been done for 5 years. And who are these people who logged in from Vietnam? I believe, I would guess his password was unchanged because it sounds like he logged into it himself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, one thing in looking into this, Facebook has, they have a section of Facebook where you can go in there and you can say, yes, delete my account. They do tell you it's permanent and there's, you know, I think there's like 14 days, but for everything, 14 days for it to process and you have a few days to like change your mind. But then it's like a 90-day process where everything removes. The trick, and I think the big challenge here, is that there are a number of ways that Facebook makes it so that that deletion will cancel itself. If you happen to log in on your device, if you happen to like anything on a website that you visit, this is, I think, possibly what might be the problem here. If you have Facebook Connect set up to any accounts whatsoever, and for whatever reason those accounts are called upon to log into one of your accounts that's set up through Facebook Connect, that will tell Facebook,
so,
no, you're still using it, don't get rid of it.
If I logged in using Facebook Connect, let's say I use that as a login to Foursquare, And then later, I used Foursquare. It would reactivate my Facebook
account. That's my understanding.
Wow. Yeah, they obviously, they don't want to make it easy to get off Facebook.
Right.
And they reactivate your account just because of the slightest.
Yeah.
And they go, okay, yeah. Yeah. Oh, you want us back? Oh, great. So you think maybe the account got reactivated a long time ago and he just didn't know.
That's what I'm thinking. I honestly don't know. And how long has Facebook Connect been around? 5 years?
Yeah, well, I would say
about
at least.
About that time.
Yeah.
So if there are any accounts that are tied into that, I'm thinking that might possibly be the problem.
Even a like.
Because you wouldn't like something on a page if you've closed your Facebook account.
But it'd be easy to accidentally click that like
potentially,
button. Maybe.
I suppose that's possible.
And if your browser had the Facebook cookie on it, that would reactivate
right.
it.
Right.
Of course, and I'm sure you've done this, Scott, change your Facebook password now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Turn on two-factor authentication now.
Yeah.
And then go back through the deletion process. It wouldn't be a bad idea to notify Facebook security that this happened and say, you know, what's going on?
Maybe they can offer some more clarity around it.
They don't really seem to respond ever, though, if you connect with them.
They don't care. They want their 3 billion users.
That's how they get to that number, right?
Yeah.
Here's another email. This comes from Arvid. I use Outlook Mail on a Chrome browser, and I receive several spam emails daily that show the sender's address as my own email address. Most of them go right into my junk folder. I've tried to block my email address, but you can't block your own address, and of course. Is there a way to block these emails or automatically delete them? Below is a copy. And
it's all you, Leo. This one perplexed me.
So spam often, first of all, spam never contains real reply addresses, right?
Right.
Because that would be problematic. People would contact the spammer. I think in the days gone by, I remember telling people, don't respond to spam.
That tells them somebody's there.
Yeah, and if you respond to the sending address, it's probably not the spammer, but some poor schmuck who's got their email address in there. Spammers use software that will automatically fill in that return address, and it's nonsensical. In fact, I would bet that some tools will just use the sender's address as the same as the recipient's address. That way, it's just kind of automatic, and plus it's more likely you'll see their email. If you're, let's see, I don't think Chrome or Outlook has the capability. It has some filters, but the Outlook on the web, does it have a filter? The best filter would be one that says something like, if sending address equals to address,
right,
then put it in spam.
Do you ever send an email to yourself?
Well, that's the problem. I do.
Yeah, I do. Rarely, but I do every once in a while with a note that I want to appear at the top of my inbox.
That may not be a filter you'd want to
turn
on.
But, I mean, how often compared to the nuisance of getting the spam? I suppose you'd have to ask yourself that question.
Yeah. I don't know of any other way. You're going to have to use filtering. And I don't think Outlook for the web has particularly strong filtering. Now, if you want better filtering, there are a lot of solutions out there that do. But you might not want to do that. That's really interesting. I don't know of a solution to that. I think you're out of luck. I think you're just going to have to deal with those. The truth is, here's the other thing you could do, and I would strongly suggest this. When you're in Outlook, .com, make sure when you get spam, you tell it that it's spam. You say, no, this is spam. Don't just move it manually, but say, this is spam.
Right.
Because that's going to train it, and eventually it's going to start recognizing that as spam, and it will automatically do that. My experience is Outlook is not the best anti-spam. I like Gmail for spam filtering. Gmail for sure would start to catch on and stop these from coming into your inbox.
But, I mean, that in this case, that involves moving to a completely different email provider.
Yeah, maybe you don't want to do that.
And transferring everybody over to that is not the easiest thing in the world.
That's why I said everybody should get their own domain name.
Yeah, yeah.
And, Jason
at
Howl.Horse.
That's a really great example.
And then you just tell everybody jason@howl.horse, you forward it to your Gmail account.
Obviously.
I think you need howl.horse. I'm just saying.
I never knew I did
You've
until
got
today.
You've two daughters. They're going to be into horses in about 10 years. You
probably
just might as well get it now. And lucy@howl.horse. That sounds good, doesn't it?
Kind of.
Actually, you probably get howl.house.
Okay.
But anyway, that's what I think everybody should do is get their own custom email address in there. Yeah, there it is. There's his new email address. I like it.
Perfect.
And,
great.
For
don't send emails there if you're actually looking to reach me. It will not reach
well,
me.
Well, the sad thing is probably already somebody has
yes,
Howl.Horse.
That's possible.
Howl.Ninja. How about that?
Oh, now that I can get behind. For
Howl.
Sure.
Howl.Pizza.
Because I am a ninja.
Yes. He is the host of TNT Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern
That's
time,
right.
2300 UTC. And, of course, every Tuesday night, you'll catch him here with Florence Ion and Ron Richards on All About Android.
Talking all about Android, basically.
That's really? Is that what it's about?
That's why we named
it's all
it that.
About Android. Yeah. Have you? Who's winning in the app battles?
Oh man! Asking me off the top of my head, I believe Ron.
If
is
it were you, you would
lead.
Know.
Yeah. You know. No. Actually, I think the guests are winning right now.
Really?
Which is pretty awesome.
Wow.
Yeah, we have the Android App Arena.
It's
a segment of every episode where everybody, including our guest of the evening, we bring a new app to the arena to review, and then everyone who watches or listens to the show places their vote. And then the next week, we tally up the votes, and it's a year-long competition. We've been doing it since the beginning of the show, so it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it really is. All About Android, Tuesday nights. I was going to say 5 p.m. Pacific, but it's a little later.
5:30 usually.
5:30.
Somewhere around there.
Whenever they kind of, it's like, well, yeah, I had a complaint.
We hang.
8:30 Eastern time, 24:30. I guess that would be 00:30.
I'm happy you're doing the conversion.
00:30 UTC. I do. I love doing the UTC in my head. And then they go daylight savings time changes back, and then I'm on them. It's a mess. Yeah. Hey, I'm so glad you came here. Thank you for being here. We do the new Screensavers at 3 p.m. every Saturday. That's Pacific time, 6 p.m. Eastern, 2200 UTC. On live.twit.tv if you want to watch, or go into our chat room at irc.twit.tv and meet some very nice geeks all there sharing a beer. Somebody bought a round of beer for everybody in the chat room. Wasn't that nice of him?
Nice, very nice. Yeah, who could that possibly have been?
That was very, very generous. Maybe it was Jeremy. I don't know. It was very generous. If you can't be here, live on-demand audio and video available at our website, twit.tv/NSS. Or use your favorite podcatcher and subscribe, twit.tv/NSS. And as long as we're subscribing, why don't you get our newsletter, twit.tv/newsletter. It's free. It'll keep you up to date on what's coming up in the week ahead. And no salesman will call, I promise. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next time on the new Screensavers. Bye-bye.
Cheers.
That was a lot of beer.
A lot of beer.